Dear listeners, welcome one and all. I'm Daniel, your frequently befuddled host. You can follow me on Twitter at @D_Twit, and you can follow the podcast on both Twitter and Facebook at @PooligansPod. Today, we're bringing you a new Meet the Hashtag Pooligans episode, a format in which we introduce you to a member of what Tim Miller referred to yesterday as Julie Mason's rabbit following. Rabbit, hey, that's all of us. Now, rabbit can sound a bit rabbly, you know, a bit frothy, a bit mangy, a bit poorly vaccinated, but that is, of course, not who we Pooligans are. We're distinguished, nay, erudite, unfailingly well-informed, only occasionally and always hilariously lewd, accepting and ponderous when confronted with the ideas of others, and therefore united in all things.
You can't handle the truth!
Okay, first of all, Jack Nicholson at the height of his career, rude. But maybe, okay, maybe we're not totally homogenous, and also not always only hilariously lewd. But you know what? Puns and double entendres are really fun, so stop being so fucking judged. Today's guest illustrates vividly why a person's Twitter handle, their profile text, and a few select tweets tell us almost nothing about who the person really is. Social media can be and is frequently deceiving, and we're just not all the same. That is what has made recording this podcast and talking to the people behind the screen names so rewarding. As Julie is fond of saying, she has the best rabbit fans out there. And if someone listens to Julie, well, chances are that, just like today's guest, they're rabbit in the best possible way. Let's go meet her. All right, today we are meeting a brand new hashtag Pooligan. And dare I say, she brings a fresh outlook to this here podcast. On her Twitter, she describes herself, and I quote here, a quote, patriot American, hashtag 2A, libertarian leaning, marriage equality, now independent. So, my dear left-leaners, grab your stress balls and bite down on your comfort blankie because we're going to talk about some stuff and we'll do it respectfully. So, you can follow our guest, which you should, on Twitter, at GOP Girl, which is GOPGRRL, and that is what we'll call her here too. GOP girl, welcome.
Thank you.
We'll get right into it. We'll do our little questionnaire with you. Give us whatever background information you're comfortable giving us, and where did you grow up? What places and experience do you feel have really shaped you?
So I am a military brat. So I was born in California, and I always say that I was raised everywhere else. And everywhere else includes Korea, Germany, travel to Turkey, travel to Singapore, travel to Italy, travel to Liechtenstein, which is a teeny tiny little country.
Liechtenstein, oh my dear lord, wow.
Yeah. I was going to say, you might actually know where that is because you're from somewhere close.
Yes, that is correct. We are the other little country that still is probably better known than Liechtenstein. So Liechtenstein is not the country that most people ever travel to in the span of their life. So this is exciting.
That's true. And actually, I have roots there, which made it extra special.
You do?
Yeah.
Do actually, tell.
My grandfather actually was born in Liechtenstein and then emigrated to the U.S. from there.
Wow, you're a Liechtenstein American. That is amazing. I have never met one of you ever. So listeners, you can already tell this is something very special we're encountering here. A Liechtenstein American. Okay, please proceed.
Okay. So after my dad's last duty station was in Central California. And so I spent about 14 years in between Monterey and Salinas and Pebble Beach and Carmel. Then went to college in West Los Angeles at a little tiny private college. And then moved to Sacramento. And 17 years ago, actually moved to Portland, Oregon, where I'm still today.
So you've seen some really beautiful places, actually. You've been to some gorgeous places.
I've been really lucky.
Compared to some of the people that you have encountered in some of the places where you grew up, who may not have been as well traveled, what impact do you think growing up that way had on you, both the military aspect and seeing other cultures and then subsequently coming back to the US?
Being in other cultures and seeing other lands, it actually really shaped my view specifically on women's issues across the globe. Things are very, very different for women in a lot of countries. One of the things that I noticed when I traveled to Malaysia years ago was that I made a huge mistake culturally. My dad used to tell me when I was growing up, you know, remember, you are not just an American, you are an ambassador for our country. So please always remember that. And so when I flew into Malaysia out of Singapore, I quite embarrassingly forgot that advice and was wearing a short sundress. Oops. Yes, big oops. And subsequently realized what an incredibly huge mistake I had made. So booked it back to the hotel, and for the remaining 3 days ended up rinsing out the only two pieces of clothing that I had that were considered modest, being a long skirt and a long dress, and washing them out in the sink each night at the hotel. Thank goodness we were only there for about 4 days.
That's a great story. For me, I have to compliment your father, though, who imparted that advice on you, because Americans in many places that I traveled to, and also even within Switzerland, Americans have a reputation for doing the exact opposite of you just mentioned, of sort of expecting that the places that they go to sort of shape to their needs and desires and cultural expectations. And I commend your father and you on not taking that route.
Well, thank you. And it's really funny because throughout my years, I have run across fellow Americans. One in particular, I traveled to York, England when I was in my early 20s, and I was acting as a chaperone for a tour of high school girls. My mother was a high school teacher, and we were stuck with another tour group that was made up of mostly American seniors, and it made me so sad. They were some of the ugliest Americans. It was truly awful. I remember being so humiliated at one point in the trip that I said to my mother, "That's it. From here on out, I'm Canadian." And the little old lady that was, you know, minding the pub where we were said, "It's okay, dear. We have them too." So,
wow. Okay. So she had some understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank goodness, because I was completely horrified.
Yeah, and I think our British Pooligan Threatney would probably also agree with that lady's assessment as well.
Absolutely.
So she made a fair point. They also exist in Britain. Yes.
Yes, they do. The world over, I'm afraid, unfortunately, but
they do. Did you have any favorite experiences? Any favorite place that you live, or was it always clear that you would end up back in the U.S.?
Well, at the time, it was always clear I'd end up back in the U.S. simply because I was a child. But favorite place.
that's a good reason. Yes.
Absolutely. Favorite place, though, I have to say, oh, that's a toss-up. I'm conflicted between Christmas in Germany, which if you've ever experienced that, you know they do it like no other country on the planet, and they do it well. The other one is London, England, and that was another very big favorite of mine.
We just celebrated Christmas and New Year's, actually, in Austria.
Oh, gorgeous.
Vienna has now deemed itself the New Year's and Christmas capital of the world.
Oh, my.
And so they go all out. I've never in my life seen that many tourists in one place. Oh, my.
It was... I don't know whether I'm charmed or horrified.
I was kind of charmified. It was like, wow, this is really pretty. But what the how many of you are there? This is incredible. It looked like Shibuya Crossing in Tokyo, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, yeah. But the entire time, everywhere. Like, everywhere was Shibuya Crossing.
Wow.
And God beware, there was a sight to see. Then it was bad. Anyway. Very, very pretty, though. So I know what you mean. And where were you for that Christmas in Munich?
Yes, actually, we went to Munich, mm-hmm. and then we spent another Christmas over in Nuremberg, and absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. Their Christkindlmarkt was just absolutely amazing.
Oh, I love the way you say Christkindlmarkt. That's great.
Well, I have to confess, I'm also married to a first generation American of German descent, so I had some help.
So you get some pressure on enouncing these things correctly.
Oh, absolutely. My mother-in-law would be absolutely horrified if I didn't at least try. She's from the old country. So it's actually really fascinating. And it's a nice reminder. It's a really nice reminder of the liberties that we've been given.
Considering that your handle is literally GOP girl, I have some guesses about what your political leanings might be, but I don't want to presume. And so how do you think that some of your experiences have influenced your politics? What was your journey and where are you now?
So my journey started out when I was younger. I was actually a registered Democrat. And mostly I think that was because of women's issues. You know, definitely. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, folks. I can't adopt feminist anymore. It's just gone in a direction that I just don't identify with anymore. But when I was younger, I was very, very much, I guess at that time, like a late 80s, early 90s feminist. So that's where I started out. But then the interesting thing is, so the way that I view politics, and I think it's because the way that I grew up, I view politics always through kind of an international lens. I want to understand, you know, if we're sending our military someplace, I want to understand what it is that they're going to be doing, how long they're going to be gone, and what the chances are that they're actually going to get out eventually. Obviously, being the daughter of a military person, it definitely affects the way that you look at war. So that's a huge thing. But starting out as a Democrat and then... it's interesting. I left the Democrat Party over Bill Clinton and the whole Monica Lewinsky issue. The interesting thing there was he lied, right? And I was really upset with that. Integrity is a huge thing for me. And I remember telling my mom, who was a theater teacher at the time, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm looking at the bags underneath his eyes and no amount of concealer can conceal that he's lying.
Damn. And those were more innocent times, if you will. Back then, stains on dresses were a large faux pas.
Absolutely. Which
not that they're not anymore, but I guess we'll get to that eventually. So that was it for GOP girl and the Dem party.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I transitioned to the GOP, and I really wasn't super active. I mean, of course, I would vote, you know, that whole thing, do my research, etc. But I wasn't really that involved until I would say post 9/11. Post 9/11 was a huge thing for me. I remember I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they had closed the airport, and my commute at the time was across the bridge, the San Mateo Bridge, going into Hayward. And it was so disturbing to me. Usually three or four planes would fly over that bridge as I made it into work in about, 40 minutes. Nothing was in the sky that morning. Nothing was in the sky that night. And I remember getting to work and sending my dad an email and saying, "What is going on?" And he said, "Well, here's the thing. We talked about this years ago, and everyone said it was too fantastic. It would never happen. And here we are." So that's definitely shaped my attitude towards government from that moment on. I think that's where that libertarian leaning thing kind of kicked in. And I started to view things with kind of a cocked eyebrow when it came to government. But I moved on through that and finally became really active in my local Republican Party in 2008 and spent a truly spirit-crushing decade, almost, trying to wrangle that particular group to the center. It was brutal, absolutely brutal. And then, speaking of a bridge too far, that was 2016 for me. That was a bridge too far. So I was a never Trump for my last couple of months as a Republican. And once he became the nominee, I decided that we had essentially set fire to being the party of Lincoln. And that was it. So I registered as an independent. Here in Oregon, thankfully, I don't have to sacrifice my ability to vote in primaries because we do have, as a third party option, the Independent Party of Oregon, which I now belong to.
So were you already in Oregon when you were doing this wrangling?
Yes, I was. And like I said, it was brutal, really brutal. Oregon is an interesting place. We have very distinct groups within the GOP. We have the group that's more from the Portland area, which is where I'm from. And then we have the group that's more from the eastern side and the more rural part of the state, which is, quite frankly, most of the rest of the state of Oregon. So the interesting thing is that our dynamic is very strange. We have a very bizarre electoral combination of things that have to line up. You have to get a certain number of D's, a certain number of R's, and a certain number of I's or unaffiliated to win the state. And it's an alchemy that is very unusual to achieve.
Is it an alchemy that has been influenced by gerrymandering at all? Or is it just the way that the state is built, basically?
No, I think it's mostly having to do with gerrymandering. There's been a lot of redistricting and a lot of things. We have a lot of seats that didn't used to be safe seats that are now safe seats for Democrats. So it's very interesting, although this last time through, it was really fascinating with their gubernatorial election. They finally ran a center-right candidate, and he actually did really well. He came within 6% of winning. That's better than any other GOP candidate has done in the state of Oregon since, I think, the 1800s, I think. So
it's been a day or two since that positive thing happened there for the GOP.
Yeah, they actually did have a GOP governor back in the 1970s, Vicatia, but you know, since then it's been crazy. So I'm of the opinion that one party rule, no matter the party, is not the most positive thing. That's why we have checks and balances in our government.
You know, we're going to get to that. Why do you enjoy the POTUS press pool? But I can already tell why that show might be an excellent fit for you. both the cocked eyebrow and the libertarian bent, where both parties need to sort of get their shit together, and neither one is particularly good at it.
So true.
Right? Is very press pool-y.
It is. And Julie was absolutely a huge welcome. POTUS in general was a huge welcome change, but Julie especially, I just absolutely adore her. I love the fact that she is very, she's very blunt, which I tend to be as well, but she's always kind, which I love, even when folks are not being on their best behavior, shall we say? But I also really love the fact that she has people from both sides of the aisle all the time, and she really strives to achieve that balance, and not in a phony way.
It's really straight down the middle and focused on journalism, I think, which is really refreshing. Do you remember when you first heard the show?
Oh boy. So I started listening to Michael Smirkanish during the 2016 election. So I'm assuming it was
drug.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Michael, though. He's so awesome. Just his, honestly, just the intro to that show. And I just heard that and I went, oh, I have to listen to this.
The song, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Stuck in the Middle with You. I was like, oh, amen. Yes, that is where I reside.
So were you ever tempted to change your handle from GOP girl to right there in the middle girl, or are you going to remain GOP girl for the foreseeable future?
Well, it's really interesting. I've been thinking about that mostly because when I tweeted at Julie, it was really funny a couple weeks ago, and she read one of my tweets, and I said, you know, hey, I'm you know, there are people out here that are not partisan. We're in the middle. And she was like, but your Twitter handle.
I remember seeing that tweet.
And I was just
excuse
like,
me, but your handle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, but the problem is that to get rid of it, I'd have to completely start a whole new Twitter account. I couldn't just add the X.
You could.
Really?
Yeah, of course you can.
Oh my God, I would love for you to let me know how to do that.
Actually, let me tell you something. I said the exact same thing that you just said to one of our fellow pooligans. Hi, Denise. And I told Denise, you know what? There is no way to change your name. Denise was talking to Joe. Mm-hmm. And the question was, can you or can you not change your Twitter handle? And I said, absolutely not. And so Denise changed her Twitter handle and said, yes, you can. And I said, oops. And Joe changed her Twitter handle. And so I now have been taught by two women who are clearly smarter than me that you can absolutely change your Twitter handle. That is totally doable.
Oh, that is so wonderful. I think you've just made my entire weekend.
So we are actually talking to GOP Girl for the first and potentially the last time.
Probably going to put an X right in front of that.
I love when this podcast helps people. It's
absolutely
just a helpful program. So you found the press pool sometime after you found Smirconish. Mm-hmm. What do you think brings you, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what do you think brings you back on a daily basis? You have all of these choices, all of these programs that you listen to. Do you listen to it on a daily basis? Do you listen to it live? Do you listen to it on demand? How do you do your POTUS press pool?
So much of the time I do listen to it live. Occasionally I have to interrupt that for meetings because I do actually have a day job.
What?
I know. Okay. Oh my God. What are you doing?
Strike against. Awkward. Okay.
Oh, but
has a day job. Noted. Okay.
But I absolutely adore it. And yeah, I mean, I listen to Smirconish on my way into work. And then I listen to Julie. And when I can, I listen to Olivier. I listen to all the folks, actually.
Wow, a real POTUS lover. That is amazing.
Absolutely.
Channel 124 all the way.
Oh yeah, I'm fully addicted.
Do you listen to any of the other channels ever? Do you venture over to your former homestead of the right-leaning, I don't even remember what it's called, channel?
Patriot, no.
Patriot. So, thank you, yes.
I just can't go there.
Do you venture over to Patriot? No. Not Patriot-y, huh?
Mm-mm. No, I just can't. It's the angry, you know, like Smirconish always said, the angry is over.
I have the same problem with the lefty. I actually have the same problem with both of those channels. I can't listen to, what is it called? Is it called Insight?
Oh yeah, I think it is called Insight.
Progress.
Oh,
Progress.
Is that the one? Gotcha.
Yeah, no, I can't listen to either one of them. It's just too far on both sides.
Gotcha. I completely understand. Well, and I can't listen to NPR because I swear it'll put me in a coma.
What about the well-known program, A Warm Shawl?
Oh.
No. Are you not familiar? You're not familiar with A Warm Shawl.
I am not familiar with A Warm Shawl, but if it's delivered in the same kind of Xanax-infused voice.
It is. A Warm Shawl is, of course, Julie Mason's proposed NPR project. A Warm Shawl is something that she came up with. The title of the program will be A Warm Shawl, uh-huh. And it will be delivered exactly the way in NPR voice.
Oh, God.
And everybody is still hopeful that that will happen at some point.
I think that would be hysterical, although I have to say that one of my very favorite things that Julie does is her millennial voice. Mm-hmm. That kills me.
Yeah, millennial voice is great. I'm still waiting for AOC voice to come of age. I think she's still working on it.
Oh my gosh, can I just tell you that when Elizabeth Warren threw her hat in the ring, I was like, oh my God, this is great. I get like a whole year of Elizabeth Warren voice from Julie. Yay!
My pearls! Yeah.
Daddy! Yes.
Yeah. Daddy, my pearls! Yeah, no, that is totally happening.
I know, totally, and I absolutely adore it. That and the, oh, Kellyanne Conway. That is that's spooky how spot on she is with that one. But yeah, AOC voice, I am desperately waiting for. But so it's a little more nasally.
But you know what's interesting about AOC voice is that it is nasally, but it's not that nasally. It's really interesting, actually. She was describing how it's still at the moment an in the shower project, that voice. Like she practices that voice in the shower, and it hasn't, I think, emerged from that experimental stage so far. Eventually I'm sure it will.
Gotcha. And I'm
looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm dying to hear that when it comes of age, because that'll be amazing.
Do you, after listening to that much of the POTUS channel, you do hopefully feel like a better informed listener. Do you share any of that knowledge? Is it not something that you discuss with other people? What do you do with all of that knowledge that you accrue?
I definitely share it with other people. I think that's one of the other interesting things that happened in 2016 is my household is a house divided. So,
ooh, let's hear that story.
So my husband spent a good 10 years in academia. And so during that time, he was more center right when we started out. And then during that journey, he became much more left leaning. But he's come, I think both of us are much more in the center now. So I'm more center right where he's more center left. But it's actually been really good because now we have conversations around things that Julie will mention or Olivier will cover. And I can send the article to him and say, hey, take a look at this. What do you think? And it's really cool because it's more kind of middle of the road, like you said, that real journalism, right? Instead of opinion. And so it's nice to be able to sit down and actually have a conversation that doesn't end in, you know, tense disagreement.
Is he also a listener or does he not press pool?
Not yet, but I'm trying to work on him about that. He actually just signed up for SiriusXM in his car. And so I've preset it for him. No pressure.
No pressure. I'm not trying to tell you anything, sweetie. I'm just saying it's right here. So press it.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep telling him, I'm like, you know, Julie's awesome. You just really just have to give her a listen. And she's fascinating. And she talks to everybody. And so, yeah, that's, I think that's what I love about her is, like I said, she talks to everybody. And I really love the guests that she has. They're just, it's astonishing and interesting to me to learn who these people are beyond their stories. I would love for her to spend a little more time with Tomasky. He's fascinating.
Michael, hi. We're still hoping to have you on. He's very busy at the moment with his book tour.
Oh.
But we're hoping to have Michael on as soon as the book tour maybe abates a little bit. He's having a great success with that new book, and it's a fantastic book.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm
really, really hoping to have him on. We had Tim Miller on yesterday. That one has not even been edited yet.
Oh, nice.
But that was also a really interesting conversation that I can't wait for everybody to hear.
That is fantastic. Yeah, Tomasky just seems like the kind of guy you just want to go sit in a bar with and talk about the issues of the day, because he's always going to have some sort of fascinating insight.
I'm going to have to talk to him again about a long piece that he wrote about why the electoral system might not be a good idea and how to get rid of it.
Which
was fascinating.
I need to go and read that, because that's something that's an issue that's really kind of getting to me, because I'm just kind of like, you know, being from a state with a small population, cocking an eyebrow at that going, I don't know about that. I came from California and I'm not super excited about the way things are going there right now. And so I'm just kind of like, do I really want to toss them the keys along with New York?
Well, let's talk about that, shall we? Or maybe we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm actually really curious what your thoughts are about California, because yours are not just, well, they're over there and they're lefties. I've never met them, but apparently they suck. You know, it's more you've spent some time here, so you know what goes down. And there definitely has been a dramatic shift in California during that last midterm election, when all of a sudden Orange County decided that, you know what, we're done. And that was a significant shift.
That threw me. I never thought I would ever see that. We used to talk about, I had a friend who moved down there. She lived in Anaheim Hills. And she used to always say, I live behind the orange curtain.
Well, yeah, that is excellent. But the orange curtain was unceremoniously lifted.
That's what repainted. I heard, which is just
re-engineered,
absolutely crazy to me. I never thought I would see that. I mean, to me, that's almost like Texas going blue.
Which is also an interesting situation, because that almost happened.
I was going to say, at this point, I think it's fairly bright purple.
I've told this story now several times, but I was at Texas Trip Fest in Austin, and I was about as innocent and blue-eyed and had no idea what I was doing there. I just went there because it sounded really interesting and because I was going to get to see Julie Mason host a panel with our friends from the Washington Post. So I was really curious. And I went down there and Beto ended up having an event during that weekend, and about 50,000 people showed up.
Oh, wow.
I had the most pleasant, most wonderful conversation standing in line, talking to people. And everybody was Beto obsessed. If anybody on stage mentioned Beto's name, spontaneous applause erupted.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so it was fascinating. And so I really thought, oh, wow, these Texas people, this Texas thing is really turning purple. And then, of course, Julie and Jennifer Bendry were like, nah, that's just Austin. I mean, Austin is...
Austin the way it is. Austin, yeah.
Has no bearing on anything else, so we don't know what you're talking about, but clearly you have no clue. And I was like, okay, sorry about that. I'll shut up now.
That's so funny.
But I guess Beto really did. He ended up doing better than most people thought he would.
Yeah, I remember people saying that they were actually rather shocked by his, you know, the success that he did have, and he did come closer than anyone ever thought he would. So that was fascinating. Although, never underestimate the power of a blue vein in a red state, because that's what happened to Oregon. 50 years ago, people were like, oh God, this is a solid, bright red state. And then they started getting more people in Portland. I think the problem with that is you have something like half the state's population in the greater Portland metro. So it's really, it just tips everything to whatever direction it's going in.
So we established long ago that Julie communicates with her audience through Twitter. The Twitter audience has an impact on the show frequently. People get their name read. And like you mentioned earlier, sometimes she responds to tweets also on Twitter itself. Do you try to get your name read? Is that something that you enjoy doing, or is that just an occasional side effect of your regular activity?
You know, I think it's an occasional side effect, but I do tweet at her quite a bit. And I think it's mostly because of the fact that I do like the fact that she's interactive with people. And that to me is just, it's huge. I think it's huge because it's nice to feel like you're having a conversation with somebody, as opposed to someone who's just kind of, you know, not really engaging. And it's funny because I've heard Michael talk about trying to engage on social media more with his audience. And it's really funny because he just, yeah. It's interesting, though, to see the different platforms, right? Because Michael seems to do it a little bit more on Facebook.
Yeah, just
Julie's
a little.
Julie's definitely a Twitter, or like a Twitter person. So it's kind of fascinating.
You know, she's actually a both.
Oh, really?
She is equal opportunity. Her Facebook has a slightly different tone, but she has a very appreciative, very kind, very fun Facebook following.
Nice.
That comments and likes and interacts. And there's some more personal stuff of hers on Facebook, maybe than on Twitter. Twitter is a bit more professional.
Gotcha.
But it's definitely a follow both type of situation if you really enjoy what she has to say and you want to know what's going on there, then the Facebook is also absolutely worth a follow.
Oh, that is so awesome.
But she doesn't do the things that Michael does, where he gives like little oratories and posts videos of himself explicating on some sort of topic on Facebook, which he appears to do occasionally. That definitely has never happened.
Oh my gosh.
But have you seen those?
Yes, I have. And I actually really like them because they're fascinating. I mean, I like the fact he does it on Instagram too. He'll do these little videos where like he's out walking or something and he'll just be like, so I was thinking about this thing. Oh my God, awesome.
Organically thinking about something and thought I put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
That makes sense. No, I'm glad that I have a friend for you. Let me tell you.
Oh.
Kristen will be a great friend to you.
Awesome.
Yeah, Kristen Chatwin. Yeah, she definitely will take a great interest in your Smirconish curiosities.
Oh, very nice. That sounds awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yep. She's usually on his social media report.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
Yeah. I think TC does most of the tweet stuff, no?
Yeah, no, I think she does, actually.
On Twitter, I think it's more TC, yeah.
Definitely more TC. She's hysterical, though. Oh, my gosh, she cracks me up. There are a couple of people on POTUS that I would really enjoy just sitting down and having a drink with, and TC is definitely one of those, and as is Julie. Mm-hmm. They just seem like they'd be a whole lot of fun to sit down at the bar with.
Did you hear the show where Julie filled in and TC was on that day as well?
Oh my gosh, no.
That was super fun. I was like, TC, you know what? I don't mean to insult your usual partner, but I wish this would happen for you more often because you're talking, you're giving an opinion, and you have the chance of saying something without being immediately cut off or reminded that somebody else is here who would like the last word.
All good points. That is hysterical.
It sounded organic. And anyway, enough me making fun of Michael Smirkanish. We love Michael. We just love TC a little bit more. Okay. So how do you feel as a woman on Twitter? How do you feel about Twitter in general? Has that been a good platform for you? Do you use any other social media? How do you feel about the social media thing?
Oh, I love social media. I absolutely adore it. Yeah, on probably because Facebook in particular, I really love because it allows me to keep tabs on friends that I have that are, you know, far flung from where I am right now. So that's really, really nice. Twitter, Twitter's nice. You know, it's really funny. For a long time, you know, I did used to write for a blog. And so I used it mostly for promoting and things like that, for tweeting, mm-hmm. writing, and et cetera. But since I've been listening to POTUS, I've really been changing things up on Twitter. Well, and after 2016, there was a lot of blocking going on during the 2016 election cycle on my Twitter. Usually people with the weird green frogs with bad wigs.
Oh, those wonderful people. Yeah, I remember those people.
Yeah, they would show up and say things like, yeah, you don't have a party. It's like, great.
What? Oh, really? So you actually had alt-right Pepes reminding you of the fact that you no longer were somebody who was welcome in that party.
Oh, yeah.
That's in your name.
Absolutely. Mm. It was horrifying. I've never seen anything quite like it. They were just like, yeah, no, sorry. It's gone. It is what it is. Let it go.
Is that because you expressed a certain never Trumpy attitude?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to this day, there are still people that I have to remind, you know, excuse me, but dehumanizing language is a very poor choice. If we look at the record of history, we see that this ends poorly. So if I were you, I would stay away from that. But there are still a lot of people, you know, and that's what I think that's one of the things that really drives me nuts about both sides that I love that doesn't occur on POTUS. Is I don't hear people, you know, just wailing like you would on Progress, wailing on the right, or like you would on Patriot, mm-hmm. wailing on the left. You hear mm-hmm. more opinions from both sides of the aisle, which I think is a much healthier perspective.
Thoroughly, thoroughly agreed. Also then on CNN or MSNBC or Fox, I think it's. I was talking about this with Tim Miller yesterday, and I keep replaying that conversation in my mind, where that filter in the middle, that net in the middle, that the left and the right used to be sort of filtered through in order to get to the kind of news that then would be disseminated more widely and listened to more widely, that process is largely gone.
Yeah.
And true. Things now just seem to sort of fester on both sides. And then whatever festers the hardest gets thrown at the other side to see whether or not it's going to stick.
No, it's so true. And it's just, I think what really bothers me is people forget there are a couple very important facts going on within our politics right now. One of those facts is that the largest growing group is neither party. It's the non-affiliateds or the independents that are actually growing. And what really, I had really hoped, in all honesty, that this whole Trump situation might lead to a kind of renaissance of the moderate, as it were. I'm sadly mistaken.
the elusive unicorn of current American politics, the moderate.
Yes, yes. Exactly. Usually mm-hmm. referred to quite nastily, I might add, as the squish.
The squish. Aw, the squish. You know, I think when Schulz first announced that he was going to run, mm-hmm. people assumed that that was maybe going to be a cute little moderate squish.
No. And,
but how do you feel? Do you feel that has worked out for him? Is he moderate squish?
I don't think he's a moderate squish. I honestly don't. I have not heard squishiness in any of the things that he's been saying. Granted, he hasn't gotten really into the policy realm, which is always kind of, you know, where the rubber meets the road for me. I'm the one who, during our last election cycle for governor here in our state, was, you know, practically trolling some of our candidates saying, "That's nice, where are your policy papers?" Mm-hmm. I don't see.
Were there any?
No! It drove me crazy. I was like, they're like, "Check out our about section." I'm like, "I don't want to read your bio. I want your take on education in a state that's 48th in the nation for graduation rates. I want to know how you're going to address that." And no one could tell me on either side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for the daughter of a school teacher, that, or for somebody who used to be an educator, that is rough. And the wife of a professor, no less.
Yeah, it is definitely a challenge. So I have to sit back and kind of go, well, I'm going to be really interested to see where Schulz goes policy-wise. But so far, he doesn't seem squishy to me.
Are you Schulz curious?
I am definitely Schulz curious.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't share the widely held view of the left that this man needs to immediately pack up his venti and go back to wherever he came from.
Seattle?
Yeah, exactly.
No,
and not be heard from again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I definitely don't share that view. I think he has some interesting things to say. Like I said, I'm very interested in hearing about them. Because I got to tell you, I mean, what am I going to do for another year? Am I going to try to elect a rodent to the White House and write in Mickey Mouse? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's that bad, huh?
It is that bad.
So we'll do one more press pool question and then we'll go to that bit, because I'm really curious where you are at this point in your 2020 anticipation and how that's going for you. So we'll go there in a second.
Okay.
But before we go there, do you have any favorite POTUS press pool moments or any favorite POTUS press pool guests?
Guests, I'd have to say probably Tomaskey and of course Olivier, because we all love Olivier. He's awesome. And
this
he always
true.
Brings wonderful, wonderful, fascinating stories with lots of very salient points and good, you know, hard questions, which I adore. Mm-hmm. It's a good mental workout. But Tomaskey is always just super fun to listen to. I love that he calls Julie kiddo.
She comments on that occasionally.
It cracks me up. It reminds me of my dad.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he'll do it as a sign off. He'll be like, "Okay, bye, kiddo." And then you'll hear Julie go, "Kiddo."
That's so awesome. He's such a dad. I love it.
He's great. And like I said, Michael, we're still hoping to have you on this podcast. Hi. Okay, so yes, Tomaskey, great. Olivier, great. Anybody else that comes to mind?
I would say that's definitely the cream of the crop.
And with that, we're going to go to our policy and 2020 round, which is what everybody has been waiting for. Okay. So prominently featured on your profile, and I know that this part is easily editable, so it's there for a reason. What are your Second Amendment feels?
So Second Amendment feels. So I believe in the right to defend oneself and one's family and one's property. I'm for responsible gun ownership too. That's the other thing. I think what bothers me about a lot of folks when they get into the Second Amendment space, there are a lot of people who are just like, you know, guns, guns, guns. I'm like, that's great, but you need to be responsible with them. And so you need to have things like gun safes, registration, and I'm all for background checks, which I'm sure has quite a few two-way supporters gnashing their teeth.
I'm not, yeah, probably, because I never really understood. My grandfather owned many guns and rifles. I own several handguns, and I never could quite understand what the problem was with background checks. That seemed extremely normal to me.
Eminently reasonable.
Right. And so I'm always confused when people are like, nope, We are not only do we want to own any kind of gun that we can imagine.
Yeah.
We also absolutely need to have them immediately, and we have to be able to buy them at gun shows, and nobody should know that we have them, because otherwise somebody's going to break down our door and take them away from us, and this will be very sad, because then we can't form a militia.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and it's so sad, but you're completely spot on. But I guess what really bothers me about that is, you know, first of all, when was the last time anybody formed a militia in this country?
Right now, down at the border, we have some Minutemen that do super responsible work.
Oh, that is true. That is true. So we have those guys.
They're awesome.
Some other folks. But, I mean, like, as an actual force to defend the country on a large scale.
I'm wondering how much of that will be tied to this idea, and now we're already at 2020, but I'm curious, do you think that any of that can be successfully tied to Trump's current attack line, which seems to be working, of the left just being, you know, socialists that want to make America into the next Venezuela, and part of said socialism will be that all the guns will be gone, and now we have to defend ourselves from the leftist Gestapo that is about to invade your perfectly secured home?
Well, you know, yeah, the sad part is I see Trump playing into that paranoia in a huge way. But living where I live, I also understand that, yeah, that isn't always paranoia. There have been quite a few bills here in our state that have been attempted to be passed that definitely kind of make you wonder, like, registry? I don't know about a registry. You have the sales records, you know, for the federally licensed firearms dealers in the state. Do we need a state registry? I don't know about that.
I guess my question would be, do we or do we not need a state registry as long as gun shows are still a loophole?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I think actually it would be best to just close that loophole, because I feel like that's going to be the more reasonable thing to do, and quite frankly probably the cheaper thing to do, because at that point, right, your business owners are going to be the ones absorbing that cost and passing it on to the consumer, whereas if we end up standing up another part of our massive bureaucracy in our state, we're going to have to support that with even more budget.
I'm fascinated by how this plays out. I'm just struck by the fact that in Switzerland, pretty much every male living in Switzerland has a gun, because you get one when you enter the military, which is mandatory. So it's not something that you really have a choice in. And so everybody owns a gun. But gun violence is, I mean, laughably minuscule compared to what's happening in the United States. And so it seems one of those uniquely American issues.
I would agree with that. And the other thing I would ask about that is, you know, I knew a guy a long time ago who used to say an armed society is a polite society. And, well, you know, that actually seems to bear out in the Swiss point of view. So that's interesting. And I guess the other thing that I would say about that is, I think sometimes it's kind of like alcohol, right? When I was growing up, my parents took a more European tact on alcohol. And so they were like, you know, if you want to have a glass of wine, that's totally fine. Just do it at home. I never drank. I just didn't.
And then what happened?
Well,
you just never drank at all. You, like, to this day, you're not super
no
alcohol curious.
Definitely not. But it was never a big thing for me in high school. Never a big thing for me in college. So I think that allowing somebody access, you know, kind of like the Swiss model, right? You guys have access. Mm-hmm. You understand how to utilize them because you've had military training, obviously going to be required to maintain them responsibly. Again, because in the military, if you have a gun that isn't well maintained, you've got a serious problem if you're in a conflict. So
yeah.
I think responsible gun ownership would go a long way.
It really would. I think the saddest thing about the statistics is that the majority of gun deaths are, of course, suicides.
Right. Well, I think that goes back to mental health.
Right, absolutely.
And I think that that's a huge, huge problem in our country for a myriad of reasons. But I think this is one of those areas where, unfortunately, our puritanical roots really start to show.
In what way do you mean?
So I think instead of tackling mental health, I think that a lot of folks just kind of sweep it under the rug, or I don't really want to deal with that. Or there was one person that I knew who was in the Navy for years, and he used to give his wife this horrible line when she would say she wanted to go see a counselor. And he would say, well, then I'll lose my top secret clearance.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was incredible. And so it had to wait until finally he retired, and then she finally got him into counseling. But I mean, it was a serious problem for them, and he would not address any of his depression issues until he got out.
I'm really curious for how many, that's so interesting. I've never heard that before. I'm really curious for how many service members that is actually a reason to avoid help with their mental health.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, I'm not in the military myself, so I don't have experience with that. But if that's true, that's a serious mm-hmm. problem that needs to be addressed.
I didn't ask you this before. Have you tried to talk any of the other Julie followers, any of the other Pooligans? Is that something that you've pursued at all?
No, actually, I haven't. And that's so funny, because it's something that I think I probably should do.
Yeah, because when I mentioned it, I was like, okay, so we're going to have a GOP girl. We're going to do a Meet the Pooligans. And people were like, who is she? You're like, oh, really? What? No, none of you? Not one of you. But I guess this explains why. So it's something that you might be interested in, though. So that's good to know.
Oh, definitely. Because I think, like, especially Bubbles, oh my God. I just about die every time she reads one of Bubbles' comments, because it's just so spot on and well-informed.
There's a famous running joke on this podcast that there has to be at least one Bubbles mention on every podcast. And I'm so happy that it happened here organically, so I don't have to come up with one.
That's awesome.
Thank you for that. He will be tickled pink, as usual.
That is fantastic. The only place where I have to part with him, though, is the cheese.
Oh, my God. Insert record scratch sound. What? Yeah.
Dairy allergy.
What? Okay, that is not an excuse. That is what lactate is for.
Oh, no, no, no. It's casein. So it's not the sugars. It's the proteins.
Ooh, okay. That might, I have to read up on that one to make sure that is an actual excuse, but it sounds serious. So what happens when you ingest cheese?
Oh, it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun.
Yeah, but if we value or weigh not fun against a creamy camembert, where do we come down?
See, I'm more of a brie girl. I do miss my brie, and what I'm also super allergic to gluten, and so the thing that would just make me cry if somebody put it in front of me is a good French baguette with brie.
Okay, notes taken.
I would just weep.
So you were, it sounds like you were afflicted by this later in life.
Yeah, I was really happy to not know any of that when I was living in Germany. And traveling around Europe, because I could eat wonderful things like croissant and baguette and not have to worry.
Mm-hmm. Alas.
Alas, it finally caught up with me.
Whoops.
Oh, well.
Was that when you came back to the States?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It's kind of funny because I have heard a lot of people who are, that don't react well to gluten say that they can eat it overseas, but they can't eat it here.
You know, I was just going to mention that to you, because that has been really my experience. So my daughter is currently doing gluten-free in the United States, and it was actually not easy for her. But we went back to Switzerland for 2 weeks over Christmas and New Year's, and so we were in Vienna and then Switzerland, and she ate everything just fine over there. But the way that it affects her here versus the way that he affects her there are just two totally different things.
Oh, that's fascinating. Huh. That's interesting.
I don't even think that gluten-free is really a thing in Europe still.
Well, so here's the thing. I actually spoke to a woman who owns a bakery in North Portland. It's a dedicated gluten-free bakery. And she was telling me that she traveled to Paris. And when she was there, she was actually quite happy to find out that they had quite a few gluten-free, dedicated gluten-free bakeries. And she spoke to one of the owners of one of these establishments, and she said that they were just, she in particular, this one woman, was so completely horrified by the idea that someone couldn't eat good bread that she decided to make the best gluten-free bread she possibly could.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was a French person. Yeah. So that is, you know that it's legit when it's a French person, because they're usually like, do not give us this shit about our baguette. Our baguette is our baguette. We have no idea what you are doing.
Yes, exactly.
But we are eating our baguette. You are in Paris, for God's sake.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. And unfortunately, I've got to run.
You've got to run? Yeah. Okay. No problem. Thank you for spending some time with us. I hope everybody enjoyed meeting GOP girl. You can follow her right now. You still can at GOPGRRL on Twitter. I hope you all enjoyed meeting our guest, and we're looking forward to seeing what she will be called henceforth. GOP, thank you so much.
No problem.